bought some paper criticizing what the, you know, saying that we decided to put the passage on the plane, but it's absolutely false. I don't think anything could have been handled for the operation better. Mrs. Young made a decision, but the plane going back. Got in touch with her right away. Barbara Watson, the Department notifier, about the death, and she was a treasurer, so it was a shock. I think the whole thing is handled, and I think any criticism would be about the stop right away because your people think that. Yes, well, I just thought it was stood by a Boston paper. This said the man was disturbed about the way we handled it.
Sounded like we did well.
He was an honorary follower.
You were here 3 minutes from Mr. Dalton on that subject.
I think it's wrong. But I do hope to get your mail as well. I thought that our meeting today was warmly run around to our people with billing and charging. Do we have a report for the discharge of bills? Put some of our accounts it's been crushing traffic and it's terrible. And other than that,
well, there's a great act going on in the southern sheriff.
That's what I meant in your case. The guy will cover that. This week, 119 different administration officials will be talking to different groups one place or the other. Now, as you take a look at the basic situation, you have a majority of members of Congress still sitting on the fence. You don't have many against, but you don't have a majority for. A majority are still sitting on the fence in both houses. As far as the governor's concerned, the bulk of them are for it. The mayors have declared for general revenue sharing, but they're still uncertain as to what the special revenue sharing funds are going to be, so how they're going to be administered. So they're waiting to see. I think the basic problem is the number of minority groups, and I include the economic groups as well as the racial groups, are inclined to oppose and call them an active opposition. Probably going to be to reduce their opposition as much as possible by the way in which these special revenue sharing bills are finally formulated. And then to go out with a massive public campaign to develop public support, because as far as I can see, the one way to overcome the resistance of those who benefited from these categorical assistance programs and their national administration is to build up that massive public support that they're registered with Congress. Unfortunately, the National Governors Conference has taken the lead in helping to set up this National Citizens Committee headed by Governor Stratton and former Governor Brewer of Alabama. Unfortunately, this National Citizens Committee, which is a very representative group, including mayors like Stokes of Cleveland, has received very little petty attention. I didn't know about it until I went over here to talk with Morgan and the fellows who have done work to help get this set up. But the National Citizens Committee was set up as a meeting called by Governor Scott of North Carolina and then Holton of Virginia. And the purpose there is to get the governors through the country and the mayors to set up citizens groups in each state to go to work develop public support and to educate people with respect to soundness of the program. Thus far, only two state citizens committees have been created, but other governors have indicated they're going to establish them. They have created a staff, the staff man who is here in Washington is the former Veterans Administration head under Eisenhower, a competent man. And he and the governor's conference, the staff man, are following up with the governor. They've divided them up to get these citizens committees organized. I think we need to do everything we can to encourage mayors and other local officials to bolster these citizen committees and then to make them as effective as we can in getting public support. Now, the congressional liaison people are undertaking to identify the position of each member of Congress so that there can be a determination of the state where the greatest effort needs to be put forth in order to influence the position of the congressional delegation. And with the help of Deb Morgan and his staff, a strategy is being developed both with respect to the general revenue sharing program achieving it, and also the special revenue sharing program. So I think at this stage, plenty of efforts being put into it, but it's going to take a tremendous public subject, in my opinion, and expression of public support to overcome some of these resistances of the expression of subject today.
You don't see any alternative plan listed as possible. The alternative that they have is simply to spend the money so there won't be anything until the budget.
I didn't make a judgment.
I wonder if there's enough steam behind the whole idea of general revenue sharing to resist having it go into other means.
No, at this point, that's not certain. As a matter of fact, the indication is that Mills himself has may come out with a combination that consists of the family assistance program, coupled with some form of general revenue sharing, two-fold approach. But he's working on that. And of course, Bill Boggs proposed an alternative yesterday, and John Burns is out with an idea today. There are alternatives being suggested. I don't think there's any realistic alternative to revenue sharing in terms of getting the money out to the states and local communities at an early date. I think these other proposals are not really realistic. I think one of the most significant things that's happened is this shift in position on the part of Kearns of Missouri as a result of your meeting in Des Moines. He had previously been advocating support for the welfare approach of Mills. He talked to Mills when he was down here. After hearing what Mills had in mind, and after hearing of the programs in Des Moines, he came out publicly for revenue sharing. But if you take a look at these various alternatives, including the one that John Burns got out today, he talked about the tax credits. Well, the problem with tax credits is that a number of states can't take advantage of tax credits. Of course, it would be some time before states or cities, in those cases, obtain any relief. So from a realistic standpoint, I think the revenue sharing program is the sound approach.
I ask George, have you found any opposition anywhere around the country? I've been in Atlanta, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Cleveland. I've talked to editorial boards of all the papers, or business groups, and I've yet to find any one individual. And one of those I talked to who said they wouldn't support it if after they heard it explained to them.
Well, you've got groups like this that are opposed. You've got the labor groups fighting. You've got some minority groups fighting aspects of the program. In the case of agriculture, you've got the extension service people still uncertain as to whether they're going to fight it or whether they're going to support it. And this gets back to the way in which their programs are dealt with. If they're left at the mercy of the states, they're likely to fight it. But if they can get assurance, such as we've given cities and the minority groups, that they're going to be held harmless, then I think we'll have the extension service with us. I think it's very important to have the extension service people with us because they're really grassroots up to the country. I agree with Marty that whenever you spell it out, you get support. And I think public support can be built up. I think as far as members of Congress are concerned, you've got a lot of members of Congress who are uncertain as to how this is going to get their particular area. In the case of our program, for example, Shirley of Iowa, he became concerned because he thought that Council Bluffs in his district might get less money than they've been getting under model cities, urban renewal, and all these other programs they've benefited from. We haven't yet perfected a formula that will hold these cities who've been getting special treatment, because a lot of cities getting special treatment. Take a look at it. hold them harmless and at the same time treat the other citizens fairly. Now, we think we're just about home, but until we can do that and until we can present the a definite program to the cities and the mayors that makes it clear that they're going to be held harmless in the case where they've had urban and rural model cities and so on, and that the other cities are going to be treated better than they have been, why we're not going to be able to convince them that they ought to join the support. And I think, Mr. President, it would be very helpful if you meet with some of these mayors in the very near future, because they're making a good deal out of the fact that they've been trying to see you and haven't been able to see you in some months, and they're getting a good deal of publicity on that basis. I know that memorandum gone into you recommending that while they're here next week, the mayor's going to be here Monday and Tuesday next week. For
which group is this?
Well, it's both groups.
I met with the
Congress of Mayors.
I met with Lugar and all that group.
Well, the suggestion is that Lugar, who's chairman of the League of Cities, and Dave, who's chairman of the Congress of Mayors, jointly asked to designate 5 or 6 to come in and visit with you during the course of their conference, because they need to be given some assurance with respect to the fact that they want to benefit from this program, not
the
special revenue. Now, they have gone
and
supported general revenue.
Yeah, well, that's
going to
be understandable,
which is definitely what. That's right. Well, I agree with what Maury said, that the more we can get out and explain the program, the more public support we can develop.
I think the president
of these state citizens' committees can be the focal point around which to develop that support.
Press is very important, and the meeting with the editorial board is
right.
Seems to be a very satisfying thing, because it's happening in every case that I visited that they didn't know what we were talking about in discussing revenue sharing until it was explained. And then they're responding in favor of us.
I think, furthermore, those of us who have special revenue sharing programs need to get up on the hill and meet with our committees as soon as possible and spell out how the program is going to operate and make certain. Yes, there's. I know John's been up for
5 hours yesterday afternoon here at the White House with the 6 different committees. Very good example of public rescue.
I think it's clear that we need to press forward to get action this year, because we're not as likely to get action in this election. So we could get it this year, or else
that's the foolish statement. I'm sure you get a feeling. You feel about this as you did about getting the captain to go to the organization. Unfortunately, you have both the leaders of the committee handling your legislation. They're both Ken Burns and Bales. This is a tough combination. They're both smart, they're both knowledgeable. And I don't know that. Hopeful. Achieve everything you want, but I think you don't have any choice. None of us have any choice but to keep after it as long as we can. I think beyond any question, they're going to come with some kind of substitute plan. But the amount of pressure that's put on them probably will determine the type of substitute they come with, too. So I think any way it goes, you can't lose. You don't have any choice. Unless you labor in.
I just wanted to ask the governor how much real fear he has about this problem. Mills point today asked him about show on Sundays, taking that extra $3 billion Social Security thing. That's a big chunk of revenue sharing.
Well, he's allowed to Washington. He's allowed to do precisely that.
Well, then the problem we've all been discussing here is then we send the signal out to the mayors and the other interest groups and have pound mills on that point, or is it too early? Get your sense of timing.
We're going to start. By the time you get the word out and get the word back, it'll be time to hit him. It's not an instantaneous reaction. Today would be too early to hit him. But by the time you talk to the mayor, the time they kick it around and decide what they're going to do and begin to apply pressure back up here, well, I think the timing would be about right. Yes. But he's turned into very much of a political animal this year. He's as bad as it will be next year. So if you correct Bob, you probably know, or some of you know better than I, but I say Bill's acting very, very much like this was an election year this year. It's in question. You disagree with that,
Bob? No, I don't. George Bush and I've lived with him. I think he's playing par golf on the political course, no question.
It's not going to change.
That's a low par.
You put enough pressure, and he's going to have to come with some kind of a substitute, George, just like you're talking about. How good the substitute is, how acceptable it will be, will depend to a large extent on how much pressure he has on it.
You disagree with it, no?
No, Mr. Secretary, I do not. I think he's coming to us with the additional $3.7 billion in the Social Security package tied to the debt ceiling increase. He's going to come at us not directly, but supporting the Democrats' maneuver on accelerated public works, and then he's going to come at us and take over the cost of the aged, blind, and disabled under Social Security.
He's going to spend all your money, Mr. President, on general revenue share. He's going to spend the $5 billion. That he's going to give you the choice of continuing to press for general revenue share by breaking the line on your full employment budget or cutting other things out of the budget, which he doesn't think you're in a position to do. But that's what we're trying to do. For help, but we're good.
Relation, Mr. President, I think the groups I've talked to, and I've talked to a lot of the, all the conservation groups and the cattle groups, land people, and I think as far as the natural resources area, there's a big groundswell for it. Rural America, I can't tell you about the other areas because I haven't gotten any real exposure to them, but there really is a feeling that this will improve how government responds to their needs. And I think that we've got something going.
Mr. President, we have your report on John Bolton, where he stands on the visits recently. Give us a second, John.
As my colleagues, I try to make as brief as I can. Just heard November 11th, the day before Election Day, I noticed that that was the ballot process before I left. I had planned primarily to visit Southeast Asia, where we have both federal aviation and the people working in South Vietnam and Southeast Asia, of course, as well as the United States Coast Guard. I'll request them by the President to keynote her and lead the American delegation to the oil spills conference at the NATO CCMS meeting. The question, and the date was just about the time I was to leave for this trip. The question was, I keep on going that way or come back and go back the other way, and we decided to keep on going, and so went around the world. I have a little better appreciation of some of my colleagues that have to do an awful lot more traveling than I do, because we touched down in 15 countries in 21 days. We actually visited twice. The oil conference, which I keynoted, it was a very successful meeting. We proposed at that conference that by mid-decade, intentional oil spills would be stopped. That is the oil spill you get from the cars and so forth, and ships, and the success of that was measured in the fact that the resolution was passed. That went out myself, attended the meeting for the first couple of days, and then we went on about other activities, and Emily with the Coast Guard remained, and we did get a resolution passed along these lines, and the Maritime Organization is working along these lines for the time, so we think that's a very successful meeting. In addition to this meeting, of course, as long as we were going to go around in one direction, we decided that as much as we were doing a great deal of cooperative research work with quite a few nations, that it would be desirable to stop in some of those nations, who's either ministers of transport or in some cases, as in India, the Speaker of the Parliament had visited with me to stop in those nations and develop a better understanding. And we were able to share information in a approaches, both in the areas of aviation security, which was you primarily at that time, as well as automobile safety and together with particularly public transportation, which we have been pressing, and regional planning. The visit really allowed us in the field of automobile safety to actually nail down in a probably quicker period than I think that any international agreement, even bilateral, has been accomplished, and that is that we were able to sign on this trip with all the fact that we have established a fine relationship with the Minister of Transport, particularly in Germany, who had indicated to me he'd try to get an agreement ready for me as a Christmas present. I notified him in mid-October I was going to be there on the 2nd of October. Could he advance that Christmas present to the 2nd or 3rd of November? He said that was quite an order, but he'd try, and sure enough he did. And we did sign an agreement there, providing for the building of an experimental safety vehicle in the 2,000-pound class. We already have been awarded three contracts in this country for the construction of 14 experimental safety vehicles in the 4,000-pound class, which is, of course, the class that we use mostly here. We also were able to sign an experimental safety vehicle agreement with Japan. So both of those countries are now working on experimental safety vehicles. I'm very hopeful that we can sign three additional contracts with three other countries, European countries, within approximately a month or 6 weeks, in which we will be then exchanging the safety information we develop so that they won't feel that we're trying to ram something down their throats by way of developing safety standards which they can't possibly meet, and then being unable to compete in the market here. For the same token, they could very easily turn around and say, okay, General Motors, get out of here.
We have a goal, John, Rodeo has a goal in auto safety.
Yes, by 1975, we're hoping that we'll be able to have a car, or 76, we'll have a car that 30 miles an hour, you can crash into anything you want to crash into, and walk out of that vehicle without anything but a few scratches. And it's a goal that by the interchange of information, we're not duplicating the research that Germany and Japan are doing with the same token, they're not duplicating.
5 years later, something will have one that can go into a whole
50 miles an hour, 5 years later.
We're very, very.
And this is not just a real one. This is not just a realm of possibility. This is a very, very probability.
And then to encourage drunk and driving.
Because we're spending a good deal of additional money this year on our power combination program. One of the other things that we did, Mr. President, was I had General Davis come in, and we visited across many airports. We visited 12 major airports in addition to the six we had already visited when we took our trip with you to Italy, and inspected the vehicles and exchanged information on air security, on anti-hijacking measures. And it was as a result of that trip that we had such a very successful conference at the State Department, in which the State Department was very, very helpful, having 81 nations represented, and even the Soviet Union coming into the meeting finally at the last moment with four delegates. And they have now joined the International Civil Aviation Organization, which up until this time they had refused to do. So, something else, I think that was extremely helpful. We were able to meet with the heads of state both in Thailand and South Vietnam, Philippines, and Japan. And I'd like just to take a moment about our visit to South Vietnam, which I think was very important. I might say first, however, that there is a regional planning survey being conducted by eight nations in Southeast Asia. Some of these nations, and I'm sure Bill can say much better than I can, in the past have hardly talked to each other. As a result of $1 million from United Nations, $1 million from the Southeast Development Bank, and $1 million they put up themselves, the $3 million transportation, regional transportation survey. Those people are not only talking to each other now, they're developing a plan to work with each other, and this is the kind of thing which I think we are encouraging, and the Nixon Doctrine, frankly, the do-it-yourself proposition is really catching on there, because they understand that we're not just going to continue to feed them to direct the way and everything else.
we're going to try to give them seed money, give them directions and so forth, but in the final analysis, they've got to do the job themselves, and they buy it as long as they feel we're not just retiring and putting on the ticket. Southeast Vietnam, just for a moment, if I may, I had lunch with General Abrams, General Ryan. I went up to see my old outfit at CB's, and I talked with 28 Massachusetts boys, enlisted men, and met a good other, good many other people there, not just in the brass. And this was about 6 months, 7 months after Cambodia started. It was, three, 4 months after it ended. And the general reaction of the boys, and the generals as well, particularly the boys, well, we kind of felt before Cambodia we were fighting with two hands tied behind our back. At least now we're fighting with only one hand tied behind our back. The morale, they claimed, as well as I saw, was just so much higher as a result of the fact that they knew that at least those sanctuaries were the hell out of the way, and confirmed what I had learned from one of the Democratic governors that I was asked to call on the day we invaded Cambodia, and that was that one general, the last day he was there, indicated on 38 miles from where we're standing right now, Governor, there is a sanctuary. There are four more just like it along the border. And until we wipe out those sanctuaries, we're going to continue to kill American boys. And this war is just never going to end. So that was certainly, if I needed any further confirmation of the wiseness of your decision and the very courageous action which you took there. So I came away from South Vietnam with a feeling that we were on the right track, that the Laos operation is another one of those things I think took also some courage. But on the other hand, if we are stopping the offensive which they would have undertaken and are able to prevent our boys from being attacked as they would have been had this not taken place, I think that we're doing a job. I would only hope, Mr. President, that not only would you be able to meet the deadline of 284,000 by the 1st of May, but maybe even down to a half a minute, speaking with a dove today from the Senate on the way back from New York. He hoped very much that you would get it down to 250,000. He might have some very kind words to say about you if he could get you to get it down to 250,000 instead of 284,000. It was a very wonderful trip. I can't say enough about the splendid cooperation we had from State Department people. Wherever we went, we went very, very proud of some of the ambassadors, particularly right there in Southeast Asia, where I spent most of my time.
How long did you go?
I was on 21 days, 12 countries that we actually visited, so it was no vacation.
You don't know. You get home, you don't know how to go to bed.
For a week afterwards, I didn't know which last day I should go to the bathroom or eat or anything.
Mr. President, can I say just one word down to Pope's last remarks? Yesterday I spent about an hour in the Pentagon agreed. And the thing that I think has been overlooked about Laos in all the discussion is that there is no fighting in South Vietnam now to speak of. There just isn't any. And Cambodia hasn't been involved in combat at all since Laos. All the Cambodian fighting has been done by the South Vietnamese. So whereas a month ago everyone was concerned about the Cambodian government going to survive and what about Phnom Penh and so forth, there just hasn't been any fighting in Cambodia by the Cambodian forces. And in South Vietnam, this is the time of year the enemy would normally make attacks on our forces on South Vietnam. So in addition to the things that the President said in his press conference, so this is a very substantial benefit. And it's overlooked. We'll talk about what trails to be disrupted and what are the caches. It's been very important. Well, I think that's right. There's one thing, though, we've got to keep in mind, and that is that they are still maintaining their level of terrorism, assassination, abduction of the cities and the villages that have been shot down very much this year and last year. So we'll talk about the issue.
Well, I've talked about the military
trial. And overlook that. We've got to keep that in mind.
That'll continue indefinitely long after we leave.
Same point, however, Mr. President, we have not made enough of, and that is that while I was there, the figures I was given, 562 village and hamlet chiefs, teachers, nurses, nuns, social workers have been killed and 6,000 abducted. You never see this in American press. All we see is My Lai or, you know, some of the things that supposedly our boys have done. But what the other side has done,
is just unbelievable, and yet we never see about it.
Yes, and I had two trips in December, one at your invitation to Nicaragua, if you remember. The interesting thing about that is it would have been successful without any effort, because the main thing that Somoza wanted was a display of someone from the United States in his country. He was negotiating at the time with the political opposition for some kind of arrangement to modify the fact that he could no longer, under the Constitution, run for re-election. Some of our discussion was on that. Most of his actual business problems relate to the Central American common market, which then was in a tenuous state, and since then have gotten worse because Honduras has withdrawn because of their fight with El Salvador. I told him that there was no way in which we could take his side against any of the other countries to support the Central American common market as an entity, encourage it, give it technical help. But he had to fight his own battles with his neighboring country, and he understood it pretty well. The basic conclusions I would get out of that visit is that Nicaragua is probably closer in its thinking and its relationship with the United States than any other country in Central America or Latin America. Their investment policies are open, their trade policies are about as liberal and open as they can be. And Somoza has an interesting approach to his economic development, which is somewhat different from what I saw in most of the other countries that are looking totally at industry and export trade. He's been trying to build a diversified agriculture and has introduced 7 or 8 very significant crops in substantial quantities for export. But the idea that if he can develop a diversified agriculture first, and then induce industry to come into the country, he will keep the masses of people from swarming on the cities, because there will be a good way of making a living on the farms. And he seems to be making it work, because the cities have not grown, and his per capita income on the farms has gone up very materially. Beyond that, the only point I want to mention is, I learned yesterday that he's going to be here in June. He's going to the 25th anniversary of West Point for his graduation. And we'll undoubtedly want to come to Washington.
His 25th.
The trip I took was to Kenya over the Christmas holidays, with a stop in Spain scheduled on the way back, for which I was forced to cancel for personal reasons. Bill was in Kenya last year, so he knows the current situation. I think what I might say would be of interest only because I was there also 23 years ago and several times in between. I have a feel of the change there. I was obviously there before Mao, before independence. And I would say that in one generation, it is an incredible thing to see how much a country can change, because 23 years ago, Nairobi was a small town, and the hyenas came in at night to eat the garbage. 10 miles out of town, there were wild animals all over. Driving up the road north from Nairobi was a dirt road, only passable part of the year. You could see animals on both sides of the road all the way. Now Nairobi is a big modern city, a beautiful, beautiful city with the Hilton and all the other hotels there. The Kikuyu huts have been exchanged for concrete houses of various types. Villages have become cities. And the economic development is very impressive. North of Nairobi today, you go for 100 miles alongside tremendous amounts of wheat fields as far as the eye can see. They have developed a very substantial agriculture and are in a position where they'll soon be able to export agricultural products. 5 years ago, there was no United States capital in Kenya at all. Today, there's $80 million. And much more coming in. I was there dedicated to my mother's Firestone plant, where they're putting in $15 million. Education is
one of those owned by Kenyans too.
Yes,
Firestone. They've done a very good job in providing stock options. So
they've
ownership of the company by Kenyans.
Provided minority ownership wherever the local people could raise the capital. Education is almost general now. Except in the very remote areas. I was in the most remote part of the country on Lake Rudolph for a while. And up there, it's still primitive, and there's no education. The infant mortality among the Turkanas is 70%, and it is just as primitive as it ever was in history. But the rest of the country is getting education, is getting highways. The road north of Nairobi is paved now for 150 miles. The government's commercial policies are very open. They want a great deal of trade. We are a good customer of theirs, and they're buying more and more from us. Their investment policies are very free. They want capital on almost any terms, and they even give incentives for capital to come in. One of the impressions I had is that the caliber of the ministers is extremely high, and for them. They are very high quality people and extremely able, most of them Kikuyus. Compared with the other East African countries, and I've visited all of them in recent years, they're far ahead of any of the others. Tanzania, of course, is communist. Uganda just kicked out the communist government. Ethiopia professes to believe in the same things that Kenya does, but their administration, their red tape is so cumbersome that it takes 2 years to get a decision in Ethiopia that you can get in 3 months in Kenya. The result is that American business is very slow in going to Ethiopia. When I was in Ethiopia a year ago at Christmas, they were talking about a plan to set up an investment and trade center in the center of Nairobi as a joint venture between the Chamber of Commerce and the Ministry of Commerce. So the foreign businessman could come in on a one-stop basis, and the government officials would send people to meet with him right there. A great idea. But they're still debating it 15 months later, and they haven't been able to agree on where it should be or who should run it or how it should go. There's one incident I'd like to tell about because it indicates something more about the country, I think, than anything else I could say. One of the stops I went to overnight to visit an American missionary that has a boys' town was Garissa, where they have 160 boys that are orphans of the Somali invasions. And in the evening, the district commissioner had a dinner for me at the Garissa Club. About 95% of the people were blacks from the government agencies at one time and another. And there were quite a number because it was the regional center for a very large region. After the dinner, I got into discussion with some of the local government people. These were local administrators, local agricultural people, local irrigation people, and so forth. And the caliber of the questions and the world knowledge they had was unbelievable in a place where 20 years ago there was no education. One of the questions that had interesting overtones was, in view of the troubles which the United States is having with Libyan oil, is it going to affect its self-sufficiency in oil? What are the priorities by which the United States achieves its economic development program? Told them we were still debating them here. What are you doing in the United States to prevent the migration to the cities? Because this is one of our great problems in Kenya. How would you rationalize the differences between the parliamentary and the congressional system? Now, this is from clerks out of the country, which indicates they're not only well educated, but they have a very progressive attitude, they have an outward look, and I think some of these fellows at the time that I met are probably going to be future leaders in the government. As Bill knows, the great uncertainty that people talk about in Kenya is what's going to happen after Kenyatta. My own judgment, and you may or may not agree, is that the level of the government officials is such, and the predominance of the Kikuyu tribe is so great that they can surmount Kenya's departure and still have good, effective leadership under their one-party system over there. Now, the last incident of my trip was with regard to Spain. I found out that you can still get the old collywobbles in Africa. I got them on the last day of my trip at Lake Rudolph, flew to Nairobi, and was so weak there that I had to send a cable to Bob Hill in Spain saying, I can't take it. I had appointment schedule for one day in Spain. Bob sent a very pathetic cable back saying, you've got to come, no matter how weak you are. The Spanish are very sensitive because of the trials. The French minister canceled out, the British canceled out some official visits. And if you don't come, they'll think it's deliberate. So I took a commercial plane to Athens. The Air Force plane met me there and took me to Madrid. I stayed in the Air Force hospital overnight. I met the Minister of Commerce to let him know that I was really sick, and then flew back to Waterloo Hospital.
Mr. President, I wanted to say a word about politics. You'll all be making, a lot of you will be making trips outside the country. And I think it's very difficult politically to get credit for foreign affairs. It's interesting that the Democrats have been saying complimentary things about your leadership. I noticed Hale Martin's press conference the other day commended you. Well, I did the other night. And Mike Mansfield is doing the same thing. But it's very easy to lose that credit, particularly when you start concepts like our prestige is low and so forth. You remember that in 1950. And it's almost impossible to overcome if the myth develops that our prestige is low. Now it is. We can't do anything to prevent the charge being made, except this, and this is what I would like to suggest you keep in mind. And it has to be done subtly, otherwise you look like Jack Clemente. But I think the fact is that the president is considered the outstanding leader in the world. Everybody you talk to will tell you that if you ask them. And I think when we come back, if we can, in our discussions with the public and newspapers, so we'll get that idea across. Not that it's our idea, this is what we were told. It's made quite an impression on us. That sort of thing. Because if we can develop, if we can get it. Now, it's very difficult to go out and say it. That's what my original Jack Clemente definitely got kidded about that, about the slap back. But I think in this case, if on a return from the trip, you point that out, that we need that vigorous and honestly did well. The Giants have gone, and it's got to be done with a certain amount of subtlety. But if we can do it between now and the next election, we'll be, I think, a great asset. In fact, I think the tendency is when you take a trip abroad, everybody gets a fancy country. He visits, he talks about the country he visits and all the things. He puts aside the fact it's a good opportunity to sell this one idea. You don't have to say anything else. Don't talk about the prestige. The president is an outstanding leader.
Question, what you can repeat that. Mr. Secretary, I make one addition. Rabin had a meeting here with the New York Times people this week, off the record. He was at breakfast here the day after the gridiron hit. And Rabin, the Israeli ambassador, made the strongest pitch for what we're doing in Laos that I just wish it could have been public. I got secondhand, I wasn't there. He was selling Arthur Sulzberger, Seitz-Wolfberger, Wicker, Max Frankel on our policy and what it meant to the Middle East. Now, I would think that maybe that, without quoting Rabin, would be a useful thing for those who are talking in this room around the country without quoting him, to say the fact that we're firm in one place, that we're amongst our allies elsewhere. And he was very impressive on it.
I think that's a good point, but I do think we have to keep in mind that foreign policy is tough to sell. Yeah. An individual is not so tough. And in this case,
yes, keep in mind.
Because, you know, oh, if 6 months from now things go bad in the Middle East, you can't be saying this down. One thought, the president's the outstanding world leader, can be of great significance to the election.
Report on construction package, probably. I'd like to go back to George's comments, I think, on revenue sharing, because I've been out around the country, particularly in the West,
here, I'd gotten pretty bleak because two of my major constituencies, the labor department, labor unions and minority groups, don't have very favorable attitudes for us here in Washington. But Bob changed his arrangement. In other words, I had meetings with the Los Angeles Times editorial board, the supervisors of all the counties in Southern California, and then a group of leading mayors in the West out there. When you talk with them, it's an entirely different thing, and that's the place that we've got to invest our attention out there and get that back in here, because these fellows in headquarters of the minority movements and headquarters of the union movements, they just invested too much attention here in Washington for too many years to think of anything except the old federal system as being the best way to do it. You've got to change giving an end run around. So much for that. And the construction thing, I think that we're going to be coming to you in the next day or so with an idea of a subsequent step. We certainly got their attention the way you get the Mueller's attention with a 4x4. They picketed me in Illinois, they picketed me in California, and there's no question but and we've got them excited now that we can find some way to take advantage of that on our behalf and still get what we want to moderate wage increases so that they can step in the part that they're going to take. Yeah, we did look have to be that a voluntary action on their part, but they never would have taken it unless we'd done something.
What we have to have in mind is just that I can compromise for a $6 an hour to get higher than the I'm concerned about the economics.
The economics, particularly in what you might call the marginal areas where the non-union has a chance to compete against the big cities.
They said it's all
airlines. One of the real problems that we have is that EC and other members of the employers have gotten their hopes up high and looking to actually have on wages itself. And so they're around the country passing resolutions. This is nice to show of recognition of the problem, but let's get on to something else. We have a conversation with
second. You make $6 an hour. I don't know if you've caught up with this yet, but Jim, but I just saw the worst construction wage proposal. I don't know if you've seen the press, but an addition of $2 per hour for 3 years, or $6 per hour on top of the $7 an hour. I think it was Omaha, Nebraska, just came out. They're asking for a $6 an hour increase over a 3 year period.
Yeah, Mr. Joliet, Illinois, $13 an hour.
Mr. President, I said, I don't know what they're talking about being concerned, I can roll it out. That's not a fact that the rate is going from $6 an hour back to $3 an hour now. They may talk about that being a concern, but that's not a fact at all.
I think it's a threat. It's very likely.
It's just what they're stirring up, but it's stirring up, you know, they put a rumor around, but it doesn't mean a thing as far as actual fact.
Although I think,
Mr. President, let me tell you one other thing about this one. The chief of the Corps of Engineers told me the other day that the safeguard base that you're planning to build out in a common labor out there will make $35,000 a year. Now this will be a 16-hour week job because of the construction schedule, but with the overtime and with the
hazard pay and all the
hazard pay, $35,000 a year for a common labor.
Well, the interesting thing to me about the meeting that Jim had with the construction commission is the employer is just as concerned about the union as the union about this action on paper state, and really concerned about competition. In the case of labor, it's opened them up. But some of this is a non-union competition, and the same thing with the employers. They're concerned about non-union contractors who are going to be bidding on these contract. And one of the disturbing things is, as far as I know, Jim, the wage settlements are just as high, if not a little higher than we're last
year. The 15 wage settlements that occurred so far this year, they've averaged 1% more than last year. That is 19% the first year, 16 the second and third. Last year it was 18, 15, 15.
And the impact is spreading. I talked with
some meeting where the president, Booth Fair was present, and he indicated that their clerks have been getting $120 a week. They offered them a $55 increase over 18 months, which was turned down. And on the premise that the Teamsters got more and the building crews got more. And he said, I don't know that you can complain that they're refusing because the other groups are getting more. They don't know exactly where things are going. So what we're talking about here in terms of getting some action is important. And I do think this Davis Bacon situation has created, interestingly, a greater possibility of action, Jim, through your group than even the way to raise price freeze might have done.
Greater climate.
Yeah, a greater climate to get action.
Difficult with the wage price freeze. There was nothing to follow up with.
I think if he was holding the bag, but
of course, knocking the props out in these spite of where they're being protected by special concessions is a very effective thing to do as far as
right. You could follow up a wage price freeze with a legislative program and leave it on until the legislative program will pass. And then deal with the structural problems in the industry. And let me say this, it's a hell of a courageous thing to take on the David Bacon. I guess no other president been willing to take it on.
Right.
It was an emotional kind of thing with the it always has been.
We made a careful analysis of everything that's been said in the public press about this, and there hasn't been a thing in the public press negative on this. It's always been.
And what happened with wage increases, and as you point out, they're still going up.
Well, we have a, that's the possibility. They have. They've already worked on it at one level.
President, you're talking about the NCA agreement. That's all sham. Those white rules have been in existence since 1958. And they're not going to be any.
I would refer to those in terms as they relate to this next step, which he's talking about. So he's excited about it. But we've been trying to get them all along. Management later to come up with their own culture for their volunteers. And that's, if you can follow that, this one, that it's pretty much the same thing. Yes, your license now, I've got some hopes.
Well, thank you very much. We'll see most of you, I guess.